From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Toyok Soknusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, Juno Jazz and Classics Spring Festival is on now with an upcoming blues cruise and some stellar performances by recent Grammy winners Amani Wins, plus the return of Simply Three. Artistic director Zul Bailey is here with a preview. The Douglas Dornan Foundation grant application process is now open. We'll take a look at who should apply for this grant, which seeks to support organizations dedicated to the health, education, and welfare of those living in Southeast Alaska. And we'll speak with the next Juno World Affairs Council speaker, Benjamin Petrini, who will be giving a talk tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 8th. Those conversations, plus Tongass Voices, Curious Juno, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Grass, Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikach, gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan-A-D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Dead night has me writing poetry in another hotel room. J.S. Bach is on the radio. The keyboard concerto in F minor, the one you also hear on oboe or violin. The Largo movement begins, and the book in my hand drops. The room fades, and I put my reason down to trail the Bach of endless line along this earthless path. Each note full and bright, a brilliant footprint on the dark, through beauty, past knowledge, into that state that shines too much to be wisdom, is too transparent to be art. I catch a fear of the place where he will lower me when this transporting melody closes. Then it closes on itself, and here I am, dear John, back at the beginning, better.
Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That right there is from the 2024 Grammy Award-winning album called Passion for Bach and Coltrane by Amani Wins, who will be here as part of the annual tradition. And it really marks the transition of seasons. It's the Juno Jazz and Classics Spring Festival. It opened up this past Saturday, May 4th, and runs through Saturday, May 18th. There are jam-packed events over this next couple weeks. There's concerts, workshops, brown bag lunch concerts, and so much more. And helping us dive into this packed schedule and give us a preview of what's to come is Juno Jazz and Classics Artistic Director Zul Bailey. Gunathchish hot yigudi. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa iti. How's it going, Zul?
I am thrilled to be back, and we are hot and we are running. It's already in the third or fourth day. We've had Pasquale Grasso and his amazing concert on Saturday night. We've had Bach Under the Stars, where I performed Bach cello suites in the planetarium. Two concerts this past Sunday. The Navy Band's been everywhere doing workshops. Pasquale Grasso has been already performed in Huna.
Wow.
I mean, and we're like in day four. Yeah.
It's exhausted. It's just going to keep going for two more weekends, basically, right?
It's a dream come true for me. You know, I was passed the torch in 2019 to be the next artistic director. And then, of course, COVID happened. And that was a whole thing for a couple of years. So we broke up the annual time period to be a couple of times and not be so concentrated. And so many people missed the 3-week kind of charge that we brought it back this year. And so for 37 years, well, no, that's not true. Let's say for 35 years, the festival was always in May. And for two of those years, we experimented slightly, partly because of COVID. But we're back, and we're back super strong, and the concerts are just tremendous.
And this is a thing that people should know, because people may have gotten used to that idea, like, oh, if I can't get to a couple events in May, I'll see it in September. But there is no September. It's May, right? I mean, you might have some other events throughout the year.
Yeah. So the thing that came out of that is that we're not going to go dark. Our big main event is this 3-weekend festival. But during the year, there will be special events to look forward to, but there'll be singular pinpricks of excitement versus this craziness.
I love this. And we got to get today's schedule out of the way.
Yeah.
So, tonight, there's a Rush Hour concert on the Heritage Plaza with the Navy Band, Northwest Banger Brass Band, at 5 p.m.
Right. Now, if you look outside, you're going to wonder, how is that going to happen outside?
Yeah.
It's not.
Okay.
It's actually been moved into the Jack.
Okay.
So at 5 p.m. at the Jack tonight, the Navy Band, Northwest Bangor Brass Band, will be there. And they're terrific. You may have heard them at the Maritime Festival. They've been around. They're just terrific.
We were out there on Saturday and heard they are great. They have their outfits and everything.
It's serious business and serious fun.
Yeah.
And so that's it tonight at 5 o'clock at the Jack.
Okay. At the Jack instead.
It's a free concert called the Rush Hour Concert. And then, I mean, again, what we do as a nonprofit is, you know, with all the support we get and the amazing audiences, is that we're able to give a tremendous amount of free events for families and just people to get together. Of course, we have ticketed events. Those are the main events. But we've done about four today alone that are just for the community and for people just to come out. And so tonight, the Jazz Jam, that's at the Crystal Saloon at 8 p.m. And that is going to be interesting, because there's a lot of people who live here who go in there and jam it out. But they're going to be joined by Pasquale Grasso and his trio. They're going to come in and mix it up a little bit. I'll be there. It's just going to be a superior hang. And that's another thing that I love about this schedule, is that, and this is also what I missed during COVID. I missed the concerts, but I actually missed more so that the concerts brought us all together to celebrate the fact that we are together. And the concerts are an inspiring way to create and instigate conversation and have something to talk about the next day. So again, I'm just going to repeat it. 5 o'clock today, Rush Hour Concert at the Jack, Northwest Bangor Brass Band, Navy Band. And then tonight at 8 p.m. at the Crystal Saloon, downtown, of course.
And is that, it says Jazz Jam. Does that mean like if somebody has their own instrument or something, they can hop up, or how does that work?
Well,
go ahead.
No, it's a jam. I mean, you could, if you bring your instrument and you've got the confidence to go up there and sit beside Pasquale Grasso and his trio, I'm not going to stop you.
Okay.
They might stop you, but that's the whole fun part of it.
I think you need confidence and chops, right?
Once you hear how these guys play, of course, there'll be different sets. So they're not going to play all night. They're going to just join for a little bit here and there. But no, it's a, it's, it's for everybody.
That's going
to
be great.
And so if you're a musician and want to come out and just sit back and enjoy it with a cocktail, do it. If you want to go up there and try something, I don't think anyone's going to stop you.
That's awesome. Yeah. And then there's a couple days off, and then let's get to the weekend. So Friday, we have the True Blues. It's basically the True Blues for a couple days, right? They're going to do a free brown bag concert at the Jack at noon on Friday. That's Corey Harris and Cedric Watson. But then they're going to do a dance that night at the Jack as well, right?
Yeah.
But then obviously one of the big ticketed events, the Blues Cruise.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah.
So Corey Harris is a MacArthur Award winning musician. That's the Genius Grant. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have.
Yeah. So he's a big deal, and he and Cedric Watson will be performing together. And there are a lot of stories and music and behind the music. It's going to be a real adventure of sounds and words. All of their concerts, you know, we put the Brown Bag concert right before the dance to kind of be a teaser to so people can get really revved up for their big shows. Of course, the Blues Cruise is the place to be. I mean, you get on this wonderful boat. What do you call it? Alan Marine.
Right. The Alan Marine Tours.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you get out there and of course you have got the visuals,
yeah,
and the sounds and the friendships and food and drink and all of the stuff on Saturday night, the 11th, at Stadter Harbor, 8 p.m., the Blues Cruise. But again, the day before is kind of the rev up for that. Very limited seating in the Blues Cruise, not so limited seating at the dance. Obviously, it's going to be a lot of space to dance around and have a great time.
And of course, you can get all of your tickets and find out more information at jazzandclassics.org. Of all these things we're talking about, there's a full schedule on the website. So if you miss one of these things we're talking about here, you can jump on the website, jazzandclassics.org. It has a really good calendar. It tells you a little bit more about all the artists, and you can see what times and the schedule is happening there. So Sunday, I think you're up on Sunday. What's happening Sunday?
Well, thank you for saying I'm up. I'm part of the show. I play the cello, for those who don't know that. But this was a celebration. We called it Celebrate. It's first of all, it's Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a 2 p.m. afternoon concert so people can get together with their families and go celebrate their mothers or being a mother or family. But we said celebrate kind of universally because we get to finally bring back William Ransom, who was the artistic director for 4 years before the torch was passed to me. And he was supposed to be here in 2020.
Of course.
To physically pass the torch to me. And that was put on ice, clearly.
Yeah.
So he hasn't been back since 2019. And so we're bringing him back with his wife. Subsequently, Yinzi Kong is an amazing violist, and she's the violist from the Vega String Quartet. They've been here before as well. And we're going to do just a kind of a mix-up, mashup of wonderful classical music for cello and piano, solo piano, piano and viola. But we're also celebrating the 100th anniversary of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue.
Oh, wow.
So he's going to play a solo version of that on the piano to end the show with a great exclamation point. So it's going to be a terrific concert. I mean, a super fun, beautiful music, just and collaborative. So it'll be him and his wife. It's always fun to watch spouses play together.
Yeah. Partners, yeah. Whatever.
Partners, whatever.
Yeah. Playing together. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's looks that only they can.
You're always thinking about the rehearsal process, yeah, you know,
probably not great. But
that's going to be at 2 p.m. out at the UAS Egan Library.
That's right.
And that is Sunday, May 12th, Mother's Day, as Zul said. What a great thing to be able to take your mom to on an afternoon,
for
get
sure.
some brunch beforehand.
It
go
really
see
is
the
about
concert.
Family and friends and to celebrate a lot of wonderful things. And then they get to go and travel around. I mean, they're going out of town to play in Tanakee, but at the same time, they're giving Brown Bag concerts on Monday, the 13th, and doing workshops. They're both tremendous teachers, and they'll be doing workshops at Chapel by the Lake on Monday, the 13th.
So good. And
then, you know, as you just so beautifully did the intro, the Grammy award-winning.
Recent Grammy. They just won, right?
2 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were so lucky. I've been working on that group for probably, well, since the day the torch was given to me.
Yeah.
They're really hard to nail down. Specifically, we kind of insisted on a residency. We wanted them to do more than just one concert. not just because they're great at education, but we wanted them to enjoy Alaska.
Sure. You know,
we can't take for granted that most people have not been here before.
Right.
So they'll be here for several days. They come in and do the Brown Bag Concert at the Jack.
And again, the Brown Bag Concerts are free.
That's
so
right.
If those are the accessible, if you can't afford the ticketed event, you can definitely see them. Those are happening at that particular concert will be Wednesday, May 15th at noon at the Jack with Imani Winds.
Yeah. And they're very watered down events. They're very accessible. You'll get to know the artists. You'll get to know their sounds. So then when the concert by the Winds by the Lake, a chapel by the lake, which is the next day, when they do their official shows at 5:30 and 7:30, you really can sit back and trust the message and feel like your friends are up there on stage. And then the final concert of our amazing festival.
Before you say what it is, I'm going to play a little bit of them.
Oh.
For these final concerts, because they were here before. And I think people love this sort
of... Wait, are you alluding to what I'm about to speak about?
Yeah.
The final concert?
Yeah.
Yeah, hit it.
Yeah.
Certainly got everyone going last year because we had them come play at the high school and we just slammed the high school with people and there were lines around the block.
Simply Three.
That's right.
For those who don't know, and they are awesome.
They are awesome. And, you know, we were trying to figure out just a great groundswell thank you to the community just to celebrate a big, big party. And we just asked them to come back and give an encore, meaning bring them back and let them do another show for us because the first one, no one wanted it to stop. And that's on Saturday, May 18th at Centennial Hall. And if you don't take my word for it, you could just go online, go to YouTube. You'll see that they've got hundreds, literally 300 plus million hits on their songs. I mean, I'm not going to downplay classical music, but you know, if a classical artist could get 50,000 hits, that's pretty phenomenal on these crazy masterpieces. But Simply Three has really tapped into something that's struck a nerve in young people to see their instruments, violin, cello, bass played like that. What you just heard was just a standing bass and a cello. All the percussion is on their instruments. And that's Glenn
amazing.
Rocking out on the violin. So that's our final show right after the Grammy Award-winning Imani Winds. I don't know how we're going to outdo this festival.
This is a big one. It's really great. And you know what's interesting, too, is I think that it has, like you mentioned, it has something for everyone. I love having classical music as well as sort of a new take on how those instruments can be played, because I feel like that can reach into it reaches into the hearts and souls of everybody, no matter the age, but it helps to connect that music with youth. And they can then see like, oh, those instruments are pretty cool. And where does that come from? And then they realize, oh yeah, you can get classical training in that. And oh my gosh, Bach and Beethoven, all these people that I could play that also rock out, maybe just in a little bit different of a way, you know?
Well, this festival has always been visionary, and we can thank the wonderful Linda Rosenthal, the founder, the creator, for making a festival that was unlike any other festival in the world until recently. And now everyone's copying Juno Jazz and Classics because in the past, in the 80s and before, you had to either be a blues festival or a jazz festival or a classical festival. And she made it Juno Jazz and Classics, and basically, in the course of the umbrella of her festival, she was able to do a sampling of the great music of any genre.
Yeah.
And I love that. And so what we've been doing is, you know, as you just said, last year we had Mike Block and The Last Group and classical musicians will all get up on stage and jam at the end. And that was cool to see that people have those chops to cross over from classical to other like jazz and blues. But in this particular case this year, we've got a group that does it all internally. So we're going to hear everything from original compositions to covers to, oh my God, it's going to be great.
It's Simply Three. Rocking. It's the Juno Jazz and Classics Spring Music Festival. It's happening now through May 18th. You can get all of the information and the full schedule of events online at jazzandclassics.org. There's a bunch of free events. There's a bunch of ticketed events. There's the Blues Cruise. It's a couple of weeks long. It is so awesome. And Gunth Cheech Zul for coming in and break a leg on your, what do you say in the music world for good luck? I know in theater it's break a leg. What do you say?
It's a hard one because you know some people joke and say break a string. Well, you don't want that to happen. And then when you say good luck, a lot of musicians go, there's nothing lucky about this. They start shouting at you.
Because I know in dance, it's like, you know, merit or something like that.
Maybe just have a good time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Have a good time. Good. Yeah. I don't know. It's all good. Something with notes in it would be cool. But anyway, Zul Bailey from Juno Jazz and Classics. Thanks so much for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
With great pleasure. See you at the concerts.
Yes, absolutely. Up next, the Douglas Dornan Foundation grant application process is now open. We'll learn more and find out about who should be applying. But first, here's this week's Tongass Voices. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
You're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Hatuch Lachish Coalition is a nonprofit that offers indigenous-based healing practices and reconciliation with the violent history of colonization and its impacts on Juno's community today. One of these traditional practices is a dip in the ocean for strength and healing. It's methodical and intentional. Participants walk in up to their knees, then stop, then up to their waists, then stop, and so on, until they're as far in as they feel comfortable. Afterwards, participants warm themselves by the fire. We'll hear from participants and from organizer San Jean Jennifer Quinto about the strength and clarity they find in the frigid waves.
My names are Kalkut Kach and Ikaha Ka. My English name is Kai Montour. I come from Yakutat, from Siskit, the Owl House. My intention for this dip is to introduce my three nephews here, who are Take Way D from Yakutat. They just moved back to Tlingit-Ani this December, just started to reconnect to their Tlingit side. Now this is their very first dip.
The coldness of the water is like the overwhelming moments when we're in our daily lives. And because we're not taught how to process and confront those overwhelming moments, like in school or other places, and we really don't have guidance in that way, I use the water to help teach me how to navigate those really overwhelming things. That overwhelming cold sensation is what I equate to those things that we need to start confronting and learn how to navigate in our daily lives.
I was very lucky to be raised by my grandparents, Elaine Abraham and George Ramos. They were very traditional. My grandpa in particular taught me a lot about the training of the Khegaka, which translates to a true or authentic person. And that was the title of our traditional warriors. Their training began when a boy was 6 or 7 years old. He would go to live with his maternal uncle, who would raise him from that point on. And their
one of the core parts of their strength training was going into the ocean at sunrise, almost every day of their life. It was always a practice I was really fascinated by, but something I actually didn't start until my adult years. Just from personal experience, it was just like the way my grandparents were describing it to me, as a way to test and build up your true wuxian, your inner strength. The cold obviously is like so hard on the body, but the strength of your heart and your soul can like do wonders, especially when you test it for yourself. I think a lot of people that are scared to try and reconnect to this practice would really be surprised by themselves. I was scared Soriano was too small for this, but he really, really insisted he would try it.
Yeah, I saw you out there. How was it?
That was Sanjean Jennifer Quinto and Kak Ut Khech Kai Montour for this week's Tongass Voices. The Hatuch Latish Coalition dips usually align with the full moon. The next one is later this month, open to anyone who wants to join, and will be posted on the coalition's Facebook page.
Support from Sunny Slope Organic Farm, providing anything garden-related for 6 years. Located 5 driveways past Eagle Crest Road. Open 10 to 3, Saturdays, and by appointment. 907-723-6353.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Douglas Dornan Foundation provides grants to organizations dedicated to enhancing the health, education, and welfare of individuals living in Southeast Alaska. The grant period is now open, and today we have with us Foundation advisors Paul Douglas and Marcy Larson to break down the who, the what, and the how. Gunath chi sha ye adi, thank you so much for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you. Wasaiti, how's it going?
Very well, thank you.
Awesome. How are you, Marcy?
Very good, thank you.
Good. I mean, it's a little rainy out there today, right?
We kind of needed it.
Yeah, we did. I was thinking about it. When it rained the other day, I was like, when was the last? I know it sprinkled a little bit, but I feel like I've missed the rain a little bit.
A bit. It was
so
dry.
Yeah, it was a little dry, but that's okay. Well, welcome. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us about this. So, Paul, will you tell us a little bit about the fund and how it started?
Yes, be happy to. The fund was created in late 1993. Brian Douglas and his wife, with Dornan, both lost their lives in an automobile accident in late 93. And in memory of them and the work that they, volunteer work that they had done in Juneau in the 3+ years that they were here, my deceased wife and I decided to create this foundation to continue in their memory some of the things that they had been involved with. And so, WITH was involved in the preschool development program and the Alaska Early Education Organization, and Brian had some involvement in creating an Ultimate Frisbee Club and a Home Brewers Club, and they were both foster parents, and they volunteered at the Glory Hall and did all kinds of interesting things in the community in the short period of time that they were in Juneau. And so this is our effort to continue what they started.
Yeah, I can't believe that it's been, I mean, it's been about 30 years.
31 years this year is our 31st year of offering grants.
Wow.
First grant was offered in 1994.
That's amazing. And I did want to ask this because I think people are curious about it. I know that you now are housed at the Juneau Community Foundation. And of course, people can find out, you can go to the grants page at junocf.org and you can see a little bit of information about the fund and all of that. But there's a little note in there, which I think is really interesting about where people can donate to it, obviously. But where do you find your funds?
Mostly out of my back pocket.
Yeah, that's what it's interesting because the sentence on there says financial support for the fund is through donations from the family and other individuals. So the family gives a lot of this money for this grants, but that's then other correct. Individuals, if you're interested and you want to support this cause, you can go to junocf.org and give some money yourself that would go specifically towards this particular fund. And so anyone can donate to it. I just want to put that out there, even though it says that the family and probably some of the advisors and trustees and stuff probably put some money in that fund. But I mentioned it in the intro, but Marcy, can you tell us a little bit about what is funded from the Douglas Dornan Foundation Fund?
Certainly, yes. Its main purpose is to support and help folks that have special needs, like children, youth, elders, folks that need a little bit extra support in whatever activity they might be participating in, whether that be Lynn Canal Running Camp and they need scholarships for folks that can't quite afford that, or the GED program and they want to be able to pay for those folks to take their high school graduate program, those kinds of things. So all kinds of requests. It's not large. It's always been small. We donate small amounts. I think up to $3,000 is kind of the where it tends to fall in that area. But typically it's amazing the kinds of requests we get where we feel like it's great to be able to help a community out with just to finish off something that they had started, but they just need a little extra funds to finish things.
And it goes from like the basic, maybe a few hundred dollars up to, depending upon the need, maybe mm-hmm. a couple thousand dollars or a few thousand dollars, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. up to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and this is for, on the website, I just want to clarify this is for organizations mostly, right? Who are doing that work, or can an individual who may be doing something apply for a grant?
Well, an individual can, if the individual is involved with a nonprofit organization that is providing these kinds of services that Marcy mentioned.
Yeah.
Maybe the organization and or the individual collectively, the individual needs some special training.
So right, they right.
might fund some tuition for that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm not – just to be clear, I'm not saying for individuals for themselves to get the money. But if somebody has an idea for a project or something that maybe is outside of the zone of where they're working, but they want to try to get something going, this might be that little bit of seed money that, you know, $500, $1,000 to help them get some resources to get that particular fund project going.
Well, they do need to be classified as a nonprofit.
Okay. So they do have to have some sort of association with the 501c3
yes.
kind
right.
of things. Okay,
correct.
That makes sense.
Right.
All right. And so that helps me with that question about who should apply. We've talked a little bit about the amounts that are awarded. So what's the process? I know it opened up recently in terms of the application process, but what do people need to do?
Well, it's only 2 months long. So,
okay.
And we're already halfway through. So April and May are your application months.
Okay.
And then we collect all of the requests for donations up through June 1st. And then at that point, the board sits down and makes a determination on what we have available for funding and go through all the applications and award those. So typically, you know, it can be something that's going to happen in the fall or whatever. That's fine, but you just need to get the request in on the grant application these 2 months.
So the deadline is the end of May, then?
Correct.
Okay. So it opens up. So I think annually it opens up like April 1st and
correct.
Then it runs
that's
for
correct.
Those 2 months. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the advisors, which you're both advisors, but there's others that you have as well. And then you all sort of review the applications. And what is it that, can you give any hints to people about what you're looking for in terms of, you know, what catches your eye, Paul?
Well, what I find fascinating about this whole process is that there are six of us trustees who are evaluating these applications each year, and we all have our individual process that we go through, and then we sit down together, we enjoy a meal, and then we roll up our sleeves and we go through them one at a time and we talk about them. And we've never tried to clearly define boom, 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 one, two, three, four. These are the things you have to look for. But it's ultimately, to me, really amazing. Very little disagreement of any kind, and very easy to come to terms with. Do we or don't we honor, and to what degree do we honor their application request?
I see. Okay. Yeah, because I'm sure people are always, of course, they probably want more money than maybe you're willing to give.
Afford,
yeah.
Right.
But you're able to help out in different ways. And what kinds of, can we say what kinds of things or what kind of organizations or which ones have been awarded in the past?
Sure. Yeah. Like, for instance, Juneau Alaska Music Matters, JAM.
Yeah, JAM.
We've awarded a number of years replacing bows, for yeah. one. Just things that make sense that to all of us. And it's a great program. We believe in it. It really helps kids. It really helps education. So it hits a number of our important points right there. The sailing club. the sailing club, all those kids out there learning to sail is just beautiful. It's a wonderful thing to watch. And they built that program. And so they've applied for new, like, survival equipment or whatever.
Life preservers like
or
that,
whatever, yeah. Or some kind of maintenance issue that they had. It's not very much, but it goes a long way to getting their program further down the road and continuing that kind of opportunity for kids here in Juneau.
Helps buy that equipment and stuff, for sure.
And then down in Sitka, I mean, this is a Southeast program.
Right.
So down in Sitka, there's I think it's the Hames Center, and they were putting in a recreation room, and they were looking for specialized mm-hmm. equipment to be able to put in there to engage kids in that in that particular room, and it made sense to us, and we were happy to donate to that one.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of different things. Paul, would you?
The Lynn Canal Adventures, it's currently named, was originally a Lynn Canal Running Club. We have been involved with for a number of years, and they run camps in the summertime. They're now doing both high school and middle school camps. I think a couple of camps each in each age group
mm-hmm.
that we've been supporting over the years. Let me think. Sail.
Sail.
Southeast Alaska Independent Living.
Yeah.
Their ORCA program we've supported many, many times over the years, and primarily in the form of offering scholarship assistance for individuals that can't afford the fees for the programs, to include as many individuals as possible.
Right. Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, the ORCA program's awesome. Yeah, that's a really great program. And it's just wonderful, all of the organizations that you support. And so if you are an organization that maybe hasn't applied to the Douglas Dornan Foundation before, this is the opportunity, right?
Do it now.
And if this is also for those who have applied and maybe you've forgotten, the spring has gotten away from you, don't forget.
Right.
You have until the end of May.
Right.
And go ahead, Paul.
Postmark by June 1, get an application in. You can get an application by going on to the website, JunoCF.org.
Yep, JunoCF.org. And then there's a little link at the top that says grants and funds, and you just do a drop down there. And actually, what's cool about that page is it lists everything that they have there in terms of grants and funds.
Right.
And they keep it updated of what's open and what's not. And right now, the Douglas Dornan Foundation says open. It's like the third one on the list.
Yep.
And you can click that page and you'll hear a little bit more about the founders and all the folks who were involved in getting this together and kind of what it is, what they're looking for. And then the application is right there on the webpage.
Correct.
You just download that and fill it out, get it in, as Paul says, postmark it before June 1. And then you'll probably hear sometime in August or so, September.
Usually by August.
By August, okay.
Part of our challenge is to herd our cat, our trusty cats together to find a date where we all get together.
I'm sure.
Well, Gunnath Cheese for coming in today and reminding us all about this fund. It's so important and so valuable to our community. And thank you for that continued support of the Juneau community. It really means a lot.
Well, thank you. And it's a great way to keep the memory of Brian and Wythe alive, and their legacy continues. They're amazing people. So
absolutely,
it's a really wonderful thing to see.
Yeah. Thank you, Marcy and Paul, for coming in today.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Up next, Benjamin Petrini is the next Juno World Affairs Council speaker. His talk will be on the trends and current state of armed conflicts in sub-Saharan Africa. We'll meet Benjamin and get a preview of his talk next here on Juno Afternoon. But first, the most recent episode of Curious Juno.
It's a sunny Saturday in February at the Fisherman's Bend gas station. Juno resident Joyce Siepel is filling up her tank.
Do you usually go to this station?
Yeah, I do, but now I've been going to Fred Meyer because it was cheaper. But now, yeah, I'll just watch. I like coming here. It's convenient. I love watching the water here. Well, I do it. Yeah, but they've been the most competitive during the winter.
Back on Valentine's Day, the Auk Bay station's prices were 3 to 40 cents cheaper than other stations in Juneau. DeHart's charged $3.50 per gallon, and the Fisherman's Bend station charged $3.51. Meanwhile, Mike's Airport Express was charging $3.70 per gallon. And downtown, the Delta Western station was charging $3.90. KTOO listeners have asked why gas is cheaper in Auk Bay. In this installment of Curious Juno, we find out.
I'm Matthew Lewis, professor of economics at Clemson University.
And can you tell me a little bit about what you study?
A lot of my research focuses on competition between gas stations and how consumers respond to prices and price changes at stations.
Lewis says demand within a city depends on where people are and how many stations they're driving by.
If consumers are driving or commuting a fair distance, they're probably passing more gas station options along the way. So that gives much more flexibility in where consumers might purchase.
So if someone lives in Auk Bay and drives to Lemon Creek or downtown for work every day, that driver passes by a lot of gas stations to choose from. And the Auk Bay stations need to keep prices low to try to catch those drivers before they go south.
It is on the, you know, the outskirts of where people are. It's not a convenient location for a lot of people. And so they, you know, they need to have a relatively low price to stay competitive. Whereas stations on a, you know, prominent, convenient part of a heavy traveled road or downtown can charge a high price, and many consumers will still go.
More broadly, four things affect the cost of gas, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. The biggest is the cost of crude oil, which makes up more than half of the retail price of gasoline. Lower oil production drives up crude oil's cost per barrel. Refining costs, distribution costs, and taxes make up the rest. As those costs change, so do prices at the pump. But ultimately, Lewis says stations decide how much they think they can charge.
When the crude oil and refined gasoline prices go up, the stations have to raise their prices, and they do so fairly rapidly. But when oil and wholesale costs go down, the stations tend to be a little bit slower to lower their price.
Lewis says competition drives stations' prices, even within the same neighborhood. Back in October, the Juneau Empire reported an 80-cent per gallon difference between the two Auk Bay stations.
Prices do change regularly, and so consumers really often aren't all that well informed about what different stations are charging at different points in time.
So next time you need to fill up, call around to a few stations. The lowest price could be closer than you think. And if you're opting for another form of transportation,
take a moment to look around and locate your nearest exit. It may be behind you.
Ever wondered why it's sometimes cheaper to fly from Juneau to Seattle than to Ketchikan? Some of our listeners have.
We hope you enjoy our 1 hour and 59 minute flight to Seattle.
For this bonus mini episode of Curious Juno, here's Alaska Travelgram writer Scott McMurrin.
I'll answer that by asking a question. How many airlines fly between Juneau and Seattle?
2?
You are correct. I can give you a merit badge for that. So Alaska and Delta compete on that route, particularly in the summer. The next question is, how many airlines offer jet service between Juneau and Ketchikan?
I think just one.
Just one.
So, just like gas prices, it all comes down to competition. Multiple airlines will compete for customers. But if one airline has a monopoly on a route, like Alaska Airlines does on the Juneau to Ketchikan route, it's up to them to set the price. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
For more Curious Juneau stories or to submit your own question, go to ktoo.org/curious. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Benjamin Petrini is a research fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. He conducts research and outreach activities on conflict, fragility, and international development with a specific focus on Africa. And tomorrow night, May 8th, as part of the Juneau World Affairs Council Speaker Series, he will give a talk titled Conflict and Crisis in Sub-Saharan Africa. It will occur at 5:15 p.m. in the downstairs studio here at KTOO. And full disclosure, JWAC contracts with KTOO to rent our space, and this interview is not part of that agreement. So it's really nice to welcome to the studio Benjamin Petrini, as well as Ruth Patello, who is with the Juneau World Affairs Council. So good to cheese to you both for being here. Wasaiti, how's it going?
Thanks for having me, Boston. It's going great.
How are you enjoying Juneau so far, Benjamin?
Amazing. I've been here for less than 24 hours, and yeah, I really like it.
Have they taken you to any good place to eat yet?
Yes.
Where did
two of them? Two of them already.
All right. What kind of food was it?
Well, we had breakfast, and we had some vegetable spring rolls, which were great. And I hear a favorite of Bruce here.
Oh yes, okay, yeah. You got to take him to the. Whenever I go to a new town, Benjamin, and I'm always looking for. I'll ask a friend or whoever's there. I'll be like, where's the place I need to go? Where's the joint or the little place that people don't know about that I need to go to? And Juneau has a few of those.
A lot of them.
Yeah, we have a lot of them. So it's really good. So would you mind, I know I give a brief little intro there, but would you introduce yourself and give us a little bit about your background?
Sure. Thank you. I'm a researcher, and I've conducted research and policy making activities for the last decade and a half. I've always been interested in the intersection between conflict and economics, and what are the drivers, the economic causes of armed conflict. That's what sort of the intellectual question that drew me to this field, and I've worked in it. I've worked for several years with the World Bank in trying to sort of support policies that could help countries come out of conflict and sort of that what is called the post-conflict phase. So after a peace settlement, how do you rebuild state institutions? How do you rebuild an economy? And that has also brought me to very interesting places around the world, not only in Sub-Saharan Africa, but in Latin America, Middle East, and experiencing obviously a very difficult topic and very difficult issues.
Wow. And where did that sort of seed get planted in you of being interested in these topics? I know when I was a young man, I was interested in economics as well. I was in the debate club in high school, and we were interested in things like that. And the economics came up, and I almost went into that, but I didn't, right? But so where was it for you? Was it when you were a boy, or when did you start to really get interested?
The seed, I think... My father is a psychoanalyst. He's a therapist, and so I was brought up as thinking about what makes people going to conflict? What are the conflict, the internal conflict of people, but also how people relate with one another? And I think I brought that to a more collective level in thinking about collective conflict and not individual ones.
I see. Okay. That's so interesting. Yeah. Sort of like the sociological, I mean, both that and the societal sociology, right? Yeah. Sort of like the group dynamic of it, as well as like the psychoanalyst yes. part of it, right? Yes. Like what makes that happen? Because I love that about like group dynamics. Like when you see, a group can affect an individual, right? And an individual can affect a group.
Yeah.
You know, sort of that sort of back and forth. And so studying that, I think, would be fascinating in terms of how that works.
That Boston is one layer. And then there is the whole like more layer about my interest in international affairs.
Okay.
An interest in understanding how states come about. States right. are formed by individuals, institutions. They are not created by God, but we are the ones like informing those and bringing about those. And so the question is like how do states come about? How do states then develop and take care of their citizens? And sort of all these questions that then lead me to really this study of conflict of conflict is inevitable. In my field, in our field, armed conflict between groups, between states, is not something that can be avoided. What can be avoided is the violent declination of that conflict, is those conflicts becoming violent. And so how do we manage conflicts in a peaceful way, which is something that, in the 20th century, we have obviously become more and more sophisticated.
Yeah, absolutely. And this institution that you work for, the International Institute of Strategic Studies, they have offices in the United Kingdom, the United States, Germany, Singapore, and the Middle East. And it says that it's a global institution devoted to facts, analysis, and influence in the service of governments, the business sector, and the wider expert community. Can you break that down for me a little bit? What is the IISS? What do you do?
Yes. Well, we were born as an institute to deal with the transatlantic relationship between the UK and the US. We are based out of London, so London is our HQ. What we do is we try to bring influence to governments and to different actors, including corporations, about the nuances of international affairs, of security and defense analysis. We have diverse programs. The research program where I work in is called Conflict, Security, and Development, where we mostly deal with armed conflict and crisis in what today is referred as the Global South. So Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, Middle East, Asia, Southeast Asia. And in there, we try to sort of retrieve the many different dimensions of conflict that are political dimensions, that are international dimensions, that are economic, security. We do research. I attend and I run events like the one I have the pleasure to speak at tomorrow. We have a yearly publication that is called the Armed Conflict Survey. Which is a compendium of all the main armed conflicts around the world, where we have country researchers that bring their expertise, and we sort of compile all this material in a yearly publication on the different dimensions of these conflicts. So, in a way, I'm a generalist where I cover many different regions. I can only speak about a few of them, but I sort of understand the nuances, but also the general points about how conflicts come about. When we say conflicts, because conflict is like, what is a conflict? What are you referring to when you say armed conflict? Mostly we talk about internal conflicts. we could say that we could call them civil wars. But many of the conflicts today, 2024, cannot really put in a box of a civil war. There is an insurgency that wants to overtake a government and come to power. That's a sort of a more like 20th century type of conflict. Today, conflicts are much harder to define. There are many different dimensions that are also criminal, that are also for economic motives. A lot of the things that I will talk about tomorrow, but there are certain points that are very clear about what a conflict is. But on the other hand, there are many gray areas and many nuances.
I see. And that's fascinating. It's really fascinating. And so your talk will cover some of that tomorrow. But what else can we expect tomorrow at your talk?
We can expect a sort of a brief survey of the main hotspots of conflict within the continent of sub-Saharan Africa. We say sub-Saharan Africa, and often sort of the continent from an analytical perspective is divided between sub-Saharan Africa and North Africa. So North Africa are those countries that border, that are on the Mediterranean Sea, that are the Arab countries that fit more analytically with other countries in the Middle East. I would talk mostly about the countries that are south of those of the Sahara, so the Sahel countries in West Africa, the Congo and the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the whole Horn of Africa, East Africa. Including the Sudan, Ethiopia, Somalia, etc. So I'll try to give, obviously I will not be able to go into details on any of these countries, and I'm not an expert on any of these countries, but I'll try to distill and come and bring about some of the trends, the mega trends that run through all these conflicts.
That is really great. It's tomorrow night. It's May 8th. It's the Juno World Affairs Council. And Bruce, I want to mention the JWAC. You can find everything at jwac.org. And the best thing about this, Bruce, is that it's free.
Absolutely. All of our events, except for our annual fundraiser, which is WorldQuest, people can start planning their teams already for early 2025. I will mention that we have one other program yet this spring. Early summer. Benjamin is our last speaker for this 23-24 year, but we will have our Tuesday night travelogue on the 21st of May at Goldtown Nickelodeon, and it will feature North to Norway presentation by Marianne Siemens, Jim Baldwin, Claire Baldwin, and her husband, who just recently returned, and will share their exploits in the Kingdom of Norway.
Oh, wow. That's so good. And of course, you can find all that information at jwac.org. It's a really well laid out website. It just basically has all the events there as they come up. And you can just keep checking throughout the year for more information and upcoming events. Benjamin Petrini from the International Institute of Strategic Studies will be presenting his talk, Conflict and Crisis in Sub-Saharan Africa. It's tomorrow night at 5:15 downstairs in the downstairs studio here at KTOO. That's tomorrow night, May 8th. That's a Wednesday. Benjamin, Bruce, thank you so much for coming in today. It was a pleasure to at least have the beginning of that. It's a fascinating thing, and I just love how people decide on what to specialize in. And that kind of, it's really interesting, this kind of work that you're doing. So I look forward to hearing the talk and for people to be able to see that talk tomorrow. Thank you, JWAC, for bringing Benjamin in.
Gunnath Cheesh.
Yeah, Gunnath Cheesh.
Thank you very much.
That'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, another in our ongoing series, Songwriters on Songwriters. Singer-songwriter Marion Call speaks with Mike Moss of Blue Lagoon about his big 80s-inspired synth sounds. Plus, Mike will play on our red carpet stage with special guests Salisa Thole and Christina Pollack. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.